Blog Talk Radio.
Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Saturday, September the 8th, where we're getting a lot of rain. We've been having some pretty big rainstorms all day long. So I speak to you from rainy Dallas, and today we're going to be chatting with our friend Frank Burke. Frank, an author, a businessman. By the way, we have a link to his book on the show information, a fine book that I think you would enjoy a great deal. You can read it real fast, which is why I like it, because it's so engaging. So anyway, give Frank's book a check. I think you're going to enjoy it a great deal. We've got a couple of segments today. On the first segment, we're going to talk about some of the current events, like the New York Times and the No Name Opinion, which I still find puzzling why any newspaper would publish a No Name Opinion, particularly about something like this. I just find it, that is something about the Trump administration, that is. So I find that very fascinating. The U.S. economy is putting up some rather amazing numbers, and I'd like to hear what Frank has to say about that. But let me begin by saying hello from very rainy North Texas to our friend Frank Burke. How are you, Frank?
Well, thanks, Silvio. And the rain here has stopped. We had a huge amount of it. In fact, we have a place in the western part of the state that literally we can't get to yet because three of the towns that we go through on the way, are the roads are underwater.
Hmm.
So,
part of Wisconsin is that? Is that toward what part of Wisconsin is that? Which direction? Toward Minnesota, toward the east? West.
It's west, and they had a tremendous amount of rain. It's west central. It's in the western part. In fact, the county is bordered on the west by the Mississippi River.
Oh, I see.
Vernon County.
Hmm. You know, they say that Minnesota is the land of 10,000 lakes. By what you're
yeah.
explaining to me, Wisconsin may become the land of the big lake.
I'll tell you, it was incredible. It was just one rainstorm after the other. In fact, the local area out there, I was talking to some friends, and they got 16 inches of rain
Wow.
within about 3.5-4 days.
My goodness. I always thought that it snowed in Wisconsin in large quantities. I don't remember when I lived there, big rainstorms. I do remember big snowstorms.
It does both.
Yes, well, I guess so. Yeah, I guess I've forgotten about the rainstorms, although I do remember one time being at the baseball stadium there in County Stadium watching the Brewers one summer night. And it was sunny when the game started, and all of a sudden, like, it just turned pitch black. We had this gigantic storm. It passed, and then we got back to playing baseball. It was amazing. All of a
right.
sudden, it was light again. It was just a remarkable moment there. It's one of those things where, you know, you're sitting there at 7:30, everything's fine, everything's cool, you know, nice summer night. By 8:30, that's pitch black, and you're getting a huge storm. By half hour later, the storm passes, and everything was clear again. It was pretty It was pretty incredible, to say the least. But, Frank, I want to go back, pick your memory lane memory here a little bit. Go back to this day, 1974, September the 8th, 1974. This is the day that President Ford pardoned President Nixon. It was quite controversial, to say the least. It probably cost him the election of 1976. It hurt the Republicans a great deal in the midterm of 1974, but over time, Ford turned out to be right. And in fact, one of the most interesting things, Frank, I wanted to say about this is that in 2001, the Kennedy Institute in Massachusetts, I think it's the Kennedy College or something in Harvard, where they have a special name after, place named after John F. Kennedy. Every year they give out the Profiles in Courage award to a politician or to a person who did the right thing despite or put principle before country or before political ambition, I mean. And
right.
Gerald Ford was given that award in 2001 for The Partner. It was a recognition that, hey, you know, it was tough, but you did the right thing, Frank.
Yes, at the time, I think I was one of the people who said, well, how can this be? It's against our tradition. He's getting away with something. But in the end, I definitely agreed with Ford. There had been enough nonsense, and it was now time to put it behind us.
Yes, and that's exactly what he said. He also said that he was being consumed by just, you know, so many lawsuits against the Nixon, and it was like Nixon was like topic every time he had a meeting. You know, they were talking about Nixon because somebody was suing the former president, or there was a pending lawsuit, and it was like he just said one day, I got to cut this off because it has nothing to do with me, has nothing to do with my presidency. We have to stop this nonsense, as you said. And yes, it was very controversial. I agree, and many people felt like you did, Frank. But over time, I think Gerald Ford turned out to be right, as you indicated. Well, speaking of something that I think you have an opinion on, Frank, I have a feeling you have an opinion on the New York Times publishing a no-name opinion piece. And first of all, I think it's it's a free country. The media can do whatever it wants. I mean, I don't obviously. If the media wants to do this, that, or the New York Times wants to do this, let it be. But I just find it to be gutless, because you're saying, well, we've got this insider in the Trump White House, and he's telling us that there's the resistance is alive and well inside the White House. Frank, if you took that script to Hollywood, they throw you out the door. They say, you kidding me? It's a stupid script. So
yeah.
Anyway, that's my reaction, Frank.
Well, you're absolutely right, and I think that there's one thing that not a lot of people are bringing up or realizing about it, but I think it's very important. What's going on with the Kavanaugh hearings and the fact that Judge Kavanaugh will shortly be confirmed as Justice Kavanaugh is the greatest defeat of the Democrat Party. The greatest, bar none, bigger than Trump's election. Because, yes, it's Trump that's doing it. But what's really happening here is that the Supreme Court, and if one wants to look at Trump's entire record, much of the federal judiciary, are all becoming conservative. And this will last for a very long time. So I think that what the Times is trying to do, what's going on with a lot of this stuff is distraction. We don't want to be reminded that this is happening. And that's why they're trying to turn those hearings into a circus, and why you're seeing people like Cory Booker make absolute asses of themselves.
Oh,
he's
going to
tell
nice,
the secrets,
Frank.
Except that they're not the secrets.
Yeah. That's right. No, you're being nice to Cory Booker. I think he made a heck of a lot more than that out of himself. I mean, just total fool out of himself by that little stunt that he pulled. But I just think that, you know, let me put this on the table and tell me whether you agree or disagree with me. I think that there are two audiences here. And I'm going to think that maybe they're both the same size. I don't know. Maybe one's larger than the other. But I think there's two audiences. One audience is obsessed, addicted. I mean, just cannot get enough anti-Trump. It's like they just cannot get enough anti-Trump. And then I think you have a larger audience, and I think it is larger, of people who are not that political, but who basically judge presidents by the way things are going. If the economy is doing well, hey, he's doing a good job. If the country is generally well run, he's doing a good job. And they're not obsessed every single day with the tweet And, you know, whether he drinks a Coke at 3 o'clock in the afternoon or whether he tweets at 4 o'clock in the morning, they're not obsessed with that. In fact, they don't even know about that. They don't even pay attention to it. But they do pay attention to the economic news that we got this week, Frank, of unemployment claims. I mean, we haven't had this we haven't had unemployment claims like this since Neil Armstrong was on the moon. I mean, it goes back a long time. And it's like, I think most Americans are listening to that, Frank.
I think so, too. And I do not think that they are believing Barack Obama that all of this success is thanks to him, when they know it's thanks to the tax cut that every Democrat voted against and mm-hmm. the abridgment of all of his ridiculous regulations.
That's right. Well, Frank, what you just said about President Obama picked a really bad day to come back in the game, because if you're going to pick a day to say that that the recovery started on your watch, don't pick it on the Friday that we have some of the best economic news that we've had in years, Frank. I mean, decades.
Oh yeah.
So absolutely. I think his timing was a little off this time, Frank.
To be honest with you, I think that as time goes on, he is going to look like the consummate sore loser that he is.
Mm-hmm.
And the more that comes out in these investigations, and it's headed right back to the Oval Office in terms of the spying on American citizens, all of the illegality in the Justice Department and the FBI, it's coming right back there. So I think any fair-minded person is going to look at this as what it was. This was the worst presidency, both from the standpoint of policy, achievement, and now scandal. The worst
right.
presidency in this century.
Well,
last
the scandal. Yeah, the scandals, you're exactly right. I mean, everything is headed to a curtain, and when they open the curtain, there's going to be President Obama, because if a lot of this stuff was happening without his knowledge, then he had some pretty bad people around him. That's all I can say. And never did a darn thing to do to stop it. And if Hillary Clinton's server is any indication, he knew, because he was using the server to communicate with Secretary Clinton. So, I mean, he knew that she was using, an illegal way. Let's say unconventional way of running the State Department with that server. He knew it, and yet didn't challenge her. Frank, before I ask you about the economy, though, I want you to tell me the story, because I think I got it. What is it correct that somebody went up to, because I think this kind of reminds me of Trump these days, with everybody is so indignant about this and that. Remember the story of Abraham Lincoln, President Lincoln, when somebody brought to him or brought to his attention that General Grant was drinking too much whiskey?
Yeah.
And what did President Lincoln say? Buy more whiskey or something like that? What was that story? Fill me in.
He said, let me know what brand he drinks, and I'll send all my other generals a case of it.
But I think that's how a lot of Americans feel about, at least that's how I do. Look, if this is chaos, give me more of it.
Absolutely.
If this
is
crazy, give me more of it, because the results are absolutely, and you mentioned the judges. That is the most, not just the Supreme Court justices, they're the ones who get the attention, but all the other justices in the lower courts that he's filling. I mean, this is fantastic, the work that he's doing. And you're right, it's going to have, it may very well be his lasting legacy. 40, 50 years from now, we may be talking about how the Trump court, I'm not going to say it changed the country, but it put us back at least on a constitutional track, Frank.
Exactly. And, you know, I'd like to make one comment about the New York Times. Trump has repeatedly referred to it as the failing New York Times, which indeed it is. They have, now granted, newspapers generally are not doing terribly well, but even their digital sales are not good. I think that very unfortunately, because as a kid growing up in New York, I knew many people who were very well educated and said, you know, I got my education through the New York Times, because they were an excellent paper. political in some ways, yes, but not generally when it came to the news, very much in depth. And today they are failing. I doubt that they're going to be around. And it's like they're trying to commit suicide by espousing some of these weird things and doing stuff like this. Who can attribute any credibility to an unsigned op-ed? I mean, for heaven's sake. And this would not be the first time that the Times has ended up with egg on his face. A few years ago, there was a young man named Jason somewhat who was, I think, supposed to be in Alabama. You and I had talked about him. And he was phoning stuff in from a luxury apartment in Brooklyn, you know. Put on the record of that machine gun. I want to tell him I'm on the front lines.
Right, yeah, this guy really pulled it. I mean, he really pulled it on them. I'm surprised he got away with it as far as he did, Frank. Really shows you that maybe it's not that as well run. Again, you know, we're not just, I mean, look, people can make mistakes. I'm not, I mean, organizations can trust somebody and the trust can turn out to be a mistake. That's happened to all of us in business. But the case of Jason, I cannot think of his last name right now. I mean, that was just flagrant disregard for any kind of follow-up. I mean, my goodness, like you say.
Well, it was. And you're seeing this. You mentioned earlier, and it was a very astute point, about the sickness, the Trump derangement syndrome.
Yes.
And you look at all of these magazines, The New Yorker, Vanity Fair, and there are articles on totally different subjects. It can be an article on fashion, and at the end of it, there's something about Trump. I mean, come on.
I know. I mean, the Yankees may not get into the wild card game this year. It's got to be because of President Trump, right?
Right,
I mean,
exactly.
Everything is about Trump. And I think after a while, it kind of gets back to my point about the two audiences and, you know, the little story of President Lincoln. So I think after a while, when everything you read and everything is obsessed with Trump, after a while, I think people just tune out. And they say, hey, call me when you've got something real. Call me when you got something real. I think that's what happens, Frank.
Oh, I agree. And I think, you know, this is going to be the genesis of a great horror movie someday called something like A Thousand Trumps. And it'll be like Nightmare on Elm Street, where all these people go to bed and they have dreams that Donald Trump is coming for them.
It's going to be like the ultimate Twilight Zone episode, that
exactly,
you're walking down the street and everybody has a Trump face. You're walking down Fifth Avenue, and everywhere you look, there's a man with a Trump face. I mean, you're right. I mean, it is really bizarre. Frank, before we take a break, let's take a few minutes, and I'd like to get your thoughts on the economy, because the numbers have just been spectacular. You know, I have not seen 4% GDP in quite some time. We have not seen unemployment less than 4% for quite some time. And this unemployment claims way down. So, I mean, just your overall assessment of the economy, Frank.
Well, I think that what we're looking at is a combination of two things. One is, I think it's Newton's third law: for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. In effect, the money has been out of the market for such a long time due to things like high taxes, prohibitive regulations, things like that. And that certainly, what we're seeing is a tremendous inflow of money from, you know, offshore accounts, world markets, into the United States, because and you can talk about the economy, but you can't really appreciate that without talking about the military situation.
Mm-hmm.
When Trump got in and, in effect, said, we are a strong power and we are going to be a strong power, that was read by many people in finance as a guarantee of stability. And this is, therefore, the most stable country that there is, that exists.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You look at Europe, you look at England, you look at what's happened with the immigration, and all of this, the countries are falling apart.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one thing, the strength of and stability that's bringing in the money. And the other thing is the fact that there is a fundamental shift now in the way things are achieved through technology. And, you know, in the old days, and you still hear some people, well, to me, the most backward comment that Obama ever made, and believe me, he made lots of them, but the thing that showed that he was economically an idiot was when he was talking about his recovery plan and he referred to shovel-ready jobs. His mind is replaying news wheels from the Depression in the 1930s. Today, technology has changed a lot of things, and the United States is the hotbed of technology. It's the stuff coming out of Silicon Valley, the stuff coming out of the our corporate laboratories and R&D centers, which is why Trump is so emphatic about the intellectual property situation with China. This is a very great problem. But as long as that happens, as long as things are developing technologically, that's kept the United States, that's replaced us in the lead. It's no longer, how can you, you know, stamp out 6 million automotive door handles?
Mm-hmm.
It's about, from the standpoint of nanotechnology, how can you create a new and specialized metal alloy that will only have a limited number of uses, but those uses will be incredible?
Right. Well, I think I think you're onto something here, because there is something going on in this economy that I had not seen for quite some time, and you're seeing, for example, manufacturing, the manufacturing sector doing well. Now there is some concern over the tariffs. I agree with that, but I also think that the deal with Mexico has already been done. The deal with Canada is just a matter of time. What's Canada going to do? What are they going to do? Go on their own? I mean, they have a GDP the size of Texas. I mean, well, what are they going to do? So, I mean, it's not that they're going to have to come along with the United States and Mexico. So I think that's just a matter of time. But I really appreciate, Frank, what Trump is doing with China. I think it's overdue.
Yes, very much so.
I think China has basically been cheating their way for quite some time, Frank.
This is why you need the tariffs. The tariffs are really a bargaining chip. I mean, if you
mm-hmm.
said, now, Mr. China, I really want you to, you know, be nice to us and let us sell things here cheaper, it's going to go nowhere.
That's right. Now, you have to be able to you're right. You've got to be able to take something away from them. But with China, look, I remember when Mitt Romney ran in 2012, that Mitt Romney made a big deal about China, and I thought that was very strong of Mitt Romney back then. But we have got to stand up to China, because not just because they're growing. I don't mind that China is growing, but what really worries me is their disregard for, as you say, intellectual property. I mean,
mm-hmm.
they're sitting there stealing things, and without consequence, you can't do that and protect American workers, Frank.
No, and the other thing you have to remember, too, and it's the reason why so many of the luxury condos in
mm-hmm.
New York and elsewhere are sitting empty and are owned by Chinese who are getting ready to make the move. China's
mm-hmm.
going to implode at a period in time, the
mm-hmm.
same as it did, as the USSR did. It is literally too big. There are too many disparate cultures and groups in there. You know, you have the Uyghurs who are, I believe, Muslims. You have all the different provinces with very different cuisines even and cultures.
Right.
And it's only this incredible dictatorship that can hold it together. But now that the economics have turned on, people are beginning to say, well, no, wait a minute, I want a piece of that pie.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how you get implosion.
That's right. No, I think you're right. I think China, 100 years from now, maybe 50 years from now, maybe 25 years from now, I don't know. People may look back at China and said that they moved too quickly from communism to capitalism, that
mm-hmm.
they really
mm-hmm.
didn't have the infrastructure. Because when you go full capitalism, there's a lot of things that you cannot control, especially with this technology that we have, where somebody, you know, can run a business from an apartment. And that's something that makes it very difficult for a totalitarian state to control. So we'll see. But I agree 100% with Trump on China. That is one area where I think it was largely overdue. Frank, we're going to take a little break, and then when we come back, we have a special remembrance here of my father, who would have been 92 Sunday,
wow.
September the 9th. We'll be right back.
Great.
This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, and we're chatting with our good friend Frank Burke, author, businessman, contributor to American Thinker. And we, as I mentioned in the introduction, we have a link to his book on the show information. Frank, my father, who passed away in December 2015, would have turned 92 on September the 9th. He was born in 1926 in a small town in Cuba. A small town that was I think 20,000 people, something like that, in the central part of Cuba, near to about 30 miles from the water, from the ocean. My family, the Canto family, had been in that vicinity since the 1840s when the first Canto moved to Cuba from Spain. And he had what I would consider a pretty typical Cuban childhood. Of that time, you know, he and his two brothers did what kids did. They took the bike. They went to see the movies like they used to do back then. Then he met my mom. Then we came along. And then a political change in Cuba. And we came to the United States. And here we are looking back at his life. And you have something that you want to share with us. And I've been looking forward to it for quite some time. So, Frank, it's all yours.
Well, thanks so much, Silvio. And I want to say that your wonderful book has made your father come alive for me and your parents. And our younger son is a college professor in English. His primary field of study is American poetry. And he recommended a poem to me some time ago, which moved me very much. And it's a poem by a Cuban-American poet by the name of Richard Blanco. And it is about, it's about looking for the past. And when I first read it, I thought immediately, having read your book more than once, of your family. And then I realized that, like all great poetry, there's a universal aspect to it. It was about my parents, too, and it was about my wife and myself. It's about any struggling young couple who really can't afford a vacation but make sure that their kids get it. It's that and much more. So I would like to read it to you, and if you're Cuban-American, listeners don't mind my accent.
No, I don't think they're going to mind that at all. Just don't call yourself Francisco. Don't do the cultural appropriation, and that's a joke.
Right.
I'm not into cultural appropriation, but that's a joke. But anyway, go ahead, Frank. I'm really looking forward to it.
Okay, the title by Richard Blanco is looking for the Gulf Motel, Marco Island, Florida. There should be nothing here. I don't remember. The Gulf Motel, with mermaid lampposts and ship's wheel in the lobby, should still be rising out of the sand like a cake decoration. My brother and I should still be pretending we don't know our parents, embarrassing us as they roll the luggage cart past the front desk, loaded with our scruffy suitcases, 2 dozen loaves of Cuban bread, brown bags bulging with enough mangoes to last the entire week, our espresso pot, the pressure cooker, and a pork roast reeking garlic throughout the lobby. All because we can't afford to eat out, not even on vacation, only 2 hours from our home in Miami, but far enough away to be thrilled by whiter sands on the west coast of Florida, where I should still be, for the first time, watching the sun set instead of rise over the ocean. There should be nothing here I don't remember. My mother should still be in the kitchenette of the Gulf Motel, her daisy sandals from Kmart squeaking across the linoleum, and gorgeous in her teal swimsuit and amber earrings, stirring a pot of arroz con pollo, adding sprinkles of onion powder and dollops of tomato sauce. My father should still be in a terry cloth jacket, smoking, drinking a glass of amber whiskey in the sunset at the Gulf Motel, watching us dive into the pool, 2 boys he'll never see grow into men who will be proud of him. There should be nothing here I don't remember. My brother and I should still be playing Parcheesi. My father should still be alive, slow dancing with my mother on the sliding glass balcony of the Gulf Motel. No music, only the waves keeping time. A song only their minds hear. 10,000 nights back to their life in Cuba. My mother's face should still be resting against his bare chest, like the moon resting on the sea. The stars should still be turning around them. There should be nothing here I don't remember. My brother should still be 13, sneaking rum in the bathroom, sculpting naked women from sand. I should still be 8 years old, dazzled by seashells and how many seconds I hold my breath underwater. But I'm not. I am 38, driving up Collier Boulevard, looking for the Gulf Motel, for everything that should still be but isn't. I want to blame the condos, their shadows, for ruining the beach and my past. I want to chase the snowbirds away with their tacky mansions and yachts. I want to turn the golf courses back into mangroves. I want to find the Gulf Motel exactly as it was, and pretend for a moment nothing lost is lost.
Hmm. Well, that was quite moving, and I guess I only regret my dad could not hear it, but I have a funny way he is hearing it. I know he is.
I hope so.
No, I'm sure.
It's him and your
is.
Mom.
Yes, and I just think that, you know, when you sent it to me a few months ago, and now it's always better when you read it because you're really good at reading these things. I mean, that's a real talent that you have, Frank. But when the story of the parents slow dancing, that's actually quite common in our parents' generation. That
mm-hmm.
all of a sudden, you know, you would be all of a sudden you would hear music, and you go into the, I don't know, somewhere in the house, the living room or whatever, and there you see your parents dancing.
I have
memories of that. That's something I remember. The one about the cigar. Well, I mean, that's a Cuban story. I mean, that's a Cuban original. I remember as a little boy walking with my dad to the street corner in Cuba where they would sell Cuban coffee for 3 cents and he would buy a cigar for 10 cents. And he did that every night after dinner. Or at least I remember many. I don't know whether he did it every night, but he did it many nights that I remember. I used to walk down the street with him, the block with him, and we go to this. Of course, the question that I never asked him, but it occurred to me, well, why didn't you have mom make you coffee? And he never, you know, I never asked him, but it occurred to me years later. I said, you know, why didn't you have mom make you coffee? And I think his answer would have been, you know what? She did a great job with the dinner. And besides, I want to get a cigar. I think that would have been his answer. But that's the one question I regret never asking my dad. Why did you go down to the street corner? And it was a really funny routine, Frank, because we walked on the block. And it was the same place, the same old man behind the coffee machine. And he would put 3 cents on the crystal, you know, on the glass, you know, in the glass thing. He would put 3 cents and then point to a cigar, and then he would take 10 cents. And Cuban, this was when Cuban money had value. And it was like, you know, I was there with him, and it's like, you know, at that moment, who would have thought that I'd be talking about that so many years later, Frank?
Well, you know what it was, actually, Silvio? It was a ritual. It was one of those little things that you do in life. You it becomes a habit, and it's something you look forward to. I'll go down for coffee and a cigar. And just the cigar would not have been enough.
Right. And anybody who knows anything about Cuban coffee, it's a small little cup that you drink almost like a shot of whiskey. I mean, you drink it. And maybe not quite as fast as a shot of whiskey because it is very warm, but I'm just saying you don't. It doesn't take long to drink a cup of coffee, Cuban coffee, what we call Cuban coffee. I'm sure the Italians would fight with me and say that's you stole the espresso from us. It was very similar to espresso, so I'll grant the Italians that. And did we steal it from them? Probably did, but you know.
Well,
that's,
I don't know. They may have stolen it from the Turks. So if you have a cup of Turkish coffee, half the cup is the grounds.
I speak with experience there because I had one of those one day. In fact, when my dad was in the hospital, my wife and I went to a place to eat, and there was a Turkish coffee place around the hospital. And you're exactly right. It was the strongest coffee that I had ever had. More ground than liquid, as I recall, but it was very, very good.
Yet sweet in a way. It's excellent stuff. Yeah.
No, yeah, it was. I have to say that I thought it was great. I didn't know what I was going to get. But I had no idea what it was going to be when I got it, but it turned out to be a pleasant experience. Well, Frank, thank you for helping me remember my dad. He would have been 92 tomorrow. And we still miss him a great deal, and we always cherish everything he did for us. So, and I want to thank you so much for being on the show today and sharing that story with us or that poem with us, Frank. It was really great. And as always, you do a fantastic job on these readings. So fantastic that we've got a show booked for Halloween, Thanksgiving, and Christmas. So your homework over the next 3 months is to find some three things to read.
Oh, gosh, I don't know how I'm going to do that. But
I have a feeling you will do it because you always do it.
Well, thank you so much, Silvio. I think you may be praising me a little too much, but I do appreciate it. And your father lives in you.
Thank you so much. That's a very nice thing to say. I just hope I can be 10% as good as he was because he was an amazing man. Frank, thank you so much for your time. Have a wonderful evening. Give my best to Peggy, and we'll talk to you soon, I hope.
Much love to the family, Silvio, and God bless.
Thank you so much. Our good friend, Frank Burke, up in Wisconsin, as I said, we have a link to his book on the show information. Check it out. I think you're going to enjoy his book, a great deal. In fact, I read Frank's book when I was staying a few months with my parents when my dad was very ill and my mom needed some help, and I remember reading the book right there in my parents' home. Well, thank you very much for listening, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Saturday, September the 8th, where we're getting a ton of rain here in North Texas. I don't know if we can handle so much rain. We're not really good at handling rain in North Texas. I'll put it to you that way. We're just not good at it. Whenever we get a lot of rain, we get a lot of floods. So I hope that that does not happen. Thank you, everybody. Thank you for listening. And we'll talk to you the next time. Bye-bye, everybody.